Hey, thanks for listening to the Fly Racing Racer X podcast. Mark Johnson, suspension guru. Really appreciate it. So speaking of suspension, Racetech sponsor this podcast. Pulpamex 24 is code to save. Motor work, suspension work, they'll dial you in. They'll put in that KYB kit as well for you. As we talk about in this podcast, they'll do much more. Revalve your suspension, do the motor work for you. Pulpamex 24 saves you with Racetech. Racetech.com. On to the pod.
A Pulpamex Network production.
Welcome to the Fly Racing Steve Mathis Show, presented by Maxxis Tires, Renthal, and Motorsport.com on RacerXOnline.com. With your continuing gracious support of our sponsors, we're thriving at over 1,800 podcasts delivered with over 20 million downloads. Click the Amazon banner on PulpMX to help us out. Donate via Patreon if it suits you. And as always, enrich your moto lifestyle by working with the sponsors who support us. The original Moto Podcast, featuring legends of the past, stars of today, season previews, race reviews, introspection, opinion, facts, and laughs. Here's the voice bringing it all to you, Steve Mathis.
Say that dedication, your frustration.
Welcome to the Fly Racing Racer X podcast. Thanks for listening. Appreciate it. Mark Johnson from REP Suspension and myself having a good discussion about suspension, about Mark's career, working for WP, and much more. So thanks for listening. Appreciate it. Thank you to the folks at Fly Racing. 25 years of Fly. Get it at motorsport.com. Get it at your local dealer. And from head to toe, they've got you covered. That Formula helmet's amazing. Read about the technology involved in that Formula helmet on flyracing.com. And then there's the Formula Helmet S as well with the app that can notify people when you crash. Yeah, that's right. I really said that. The helmet can do that. It's a helmet with a brain. Really safe, really cool technology from the folks at Fly Racing when it comes to the Formula Helmet. And whether it's the Evo gear, whether it's the Kinetic gear, some of the best styles and colors the Fly has ever had. 25 years of Fly, Fly Racing. Check them out, bro. Thank you to the folks at Renthal as well. Monster Energy Kawasaki, Red Bull KTM, Factory Honda using Renthal. And whether it's sprockets, bars, chains, grips, mountain bike stems and bars, Renthal has you covered. Great company. You know the product's really good. Chances are, if you're listening to this and you've ridden or raced, you know how good Renthal is, right? So Renthal.com for more information on that. Super informative website with the folks at Renthal. And obviously, Maxxis Tires on board with us. The Mad Parts Kawasaki team, PRMX, using Maxxis Tires, putting in main events, Maxxis.com. The MXSTs were developed by Jeremy McGrath. He does a lot of work for the Maxxis guys. Trust me on that. I've talked to MC about this. Maxxis.com. Please check them out. Mountain bike tires. They lead the market in that. So please check out Maxxis.com for more information. We'll tell you more about Motorsport.com later on. But just know that they are giving away a free pair of their Rideco goggles with every helmet purchase as well. So we'll tell you more about Motorsport, Renthal, Maxxis, and Fly throughout this show. But for now, really interesting conversation with a super smart guy, Mark Johnson. And please enjoy. All right, everybody, as promised on the Fly Racing Racer X podcast, heavy suspension talk here on this edition of it. I want to thank the folks at Glenn at Renthal and Motorsport.com, Maxxis Tires on board with us as well. It is the owner, founder of REP Suspension, Research Engineering Suspension, and he's got a great background in the sport for a long time. Definitely helping out the AEO guys right now, among others. Mark Johnson. What's up, Mark? How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for doing this. Appreciate it. So, I guess let's start with, how is REP doing? You broke away from WP a few years back, started your own suspension company, and I know you're heavily involved with Jeremy at AEO and sort of partnering up with him and his store. How's it going, being the business owner?
Yeah, it's awesome. It's the business side of it is definitely a lot. Mm-hmm. And to be completely frank, that's not really why I got into it. But I was looking for carte blanche. I really wanted to be able to have quick response times on adjustments and things like that. And that's exactly what we have. So I would say it's going great.
And how does it work with Jeremy at AEO? How did you like? What's the partnership there, the team up of that? Obviously REP is your deal, but how does it work?
Yeah, it's been a great partnership for both sides. When I had started, I was honestly just trying to find dealers to get parts, things like that. And, ended up getting my parts through him, met him, we hit it off. And, I was just looking for someone to kind of, I wasn't looking, I guess, but it just kind of fell in a place where he's obviously really good with business, and it kind of, it takes away a bit so I could, focus on, on the suspension.
Yep.
Sorry.
Yeah.
And, yeah, no, so it's definitely mutual benefit for sure.
Yeah. And then, obviously the race team, you're a big part of that with Derek Kelly. I know the Ryder McNabb's, you've been doing stuff with Ryder McNabb. You had a few fill-ins in Supercross and all that. How much does that, look, you got your own business, you got your own support riders. You've worked with so many big names. Do you tell Jeremy, hey, like, I'll do X number of hours with your guys, or do they take priority, or how does it work for the team?
So the nice part with working with them, they don't necessarily take a huge priority. I would say they're treated in a sense like a normal team. But the best part is how close we are together. If we want something tested, they're down the street. We get a lot of feedback like daily from them, which is awesome. And if they have any issues, they literally just pop from next door and we start to figure some things out.
How difficult is it for, I mean, to me, you're the WP guy, right? From your team, from your time at the team. And I know you've done great stuff for test riders on WP stuff. And you know, and Ross probably has this same problem too. Ross Maeda, right? He's the KYB guy. How hard do you work at trying to tell people, hey man, I can do it all. I can do all the suspension stuff. Obviously, you know, you do have great knowledge of the WP stuff, but how hard is it for you to try to get people to know that you do other suspension companies?
Man, you know, that is honestly the biggest hurdle for us. And as you can see, like Ross has been around, they do a ton of KTMs, man. And we do a lot of Yamahas, just people don't really see it. And yeah, I wish I had an answer on how to get over that, but we're definitely trying.
Yeah. I mean, and then the flip side is that people bring the WP to you. You have a lot of WP customers, right? That's the flip side, I guess. But yeah, it ain't easy, right?
No, it's tough. And I mean, to be completely honest here, like it's the KTM right now is, it's tough. It's really tough. It's no secret. Mm-hmm. And, that's been a hurdle on its own. So when you're the WP guys, and you're working with a chassis that a lot of people are struggling with, it's been a wild year.
Yeah. Have we declared a victory in the air spring debate that WP seems to be holding on to? Have we just declared spring is better or we're back, or no, we haven't?
I love the air.
Okay.
If you ask any customer I talk to you on the phone or that comes in or anything, I push them to air every time.
Okay. Interesting.
They don't always listen, you know, cause they do have that mental handicap against it sometimes, that stigma, but I'm a big fan of it.
Yeah.
I would say our success rate with it as far as comfort goes and just a broader window is actually bigger with the air setup.
How big is your business for the parts you make? You make links, you make bladders, you make a lot of the small suspension parts. How is the parts selling business going for you?
It's, I always said it was about half, but right now it takes up probably a little bit more time for me.
Okay.
It's a lot bigger than people realize. Like we have a parts lineup of, it's just over 350 parts right now, suspension related parts. And it just keeps growing. We're definitely, we have some stuff coming up that's going to be really cool that we've been working on for a while now. I won't say exactly what it is, but we do have like linkage coming for the Yamaha. We're starting to work on one for the Cowie. But yeah, we definitely have some big projects coming up.
And what parts that you do sell do really well for you?
Definitely the KTM linkage or the Austrian linkage.
Okay. Yep.
That we literally can never keep that in stock.
Okay.
It's wild. Yeah.
So I had
a good one for
I had a suspension guy tell me, and he's not a WP guy, but I had a suspension guy tell me that in his eyes, when he has dynoed it and looked at it, KTM's theory is a light spring rate, and they'll make it up through the curve of the link. And that's not always, and obviously look, every suspension guy has his own theory. He's like that. I don't think that's the way to go. I think they do it for lightweight racing. And I think that this, it's too progressive. It's too much of a spike in the link and they got to go the other way. Is there any credence to that thought from somebody else?
And, you know, I've had many discussions about why they're doing that, and I don't have an answer for you.
But they are, but this guy is right about that.
Yeah, it's, yeah. I mean, they definitely are on the, especially compared to, let's say, Yamaha or any of the Japs, mm-hmm. It's a much different ratio with a lighter spring. So at the end of the day, they have a lighter bike. And right. if you're to ask me right now, that's probably why they're doing it, because mm-hmm. you can manipulate the damping and the spring rates and everything to match whatever ratio you have. But sure. at the end of the day, if you can go to a firmer ratio, lighter spring, then you look good on paper, you know?
Yeah, that's this guy was like, they just do it for weight. They want to get their race bike down. They want to get their production bikes down. You know, it's a weight thing. Is what?
Yep. I would agree with that.
Yeah, yeah. And he's like, I don't know if that's the way to go. Obviously, every suspension guy. It's funny, Mark. Every suspension guy, and I worked for a bunch of race teams. Every suspension guy thinks that the other suspension guys are out to lunch. It's funny that way, right? Like, it's a competitive industry, and everyone's got their theories, and it's like everybody's smarter than I am. So I'm not trying to pretend I know everything, but it's funny to listen to suspension guys sometimes be like, they're doing it all wrong, and they're doing it all wrong. So.
No, I mean, we're at the end of the day, we all have a racing background. We all come from racing, but mm-hmm. we don't really race anymore, right? So we gotta funnel that competitiveness into something.
Yeah, 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 exactly, right. What were your thoughts when you saw the KYB inserts in Chase Sexton's bike? It's a very popular mod. I'm buddies with the guys at Race Tech, right? They sell them. You do it, I'm sure. It was huge. I can't imagine the shitstorm behind the scenes, but what were your thoughts when you saw that?
As soon as I saw it, I text Lindsay.
Oh yeah.
I figured that would come up. It's obviously a touchy subject for them. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, Roger is the type of guy that he wants to win, and he doesn't, you know, he's willing to get in trouble to do that. Mm-hmm. And you got to commemorate him for that. Like, it's awesome that he's willing to do that. But man, to be in the shoes of that suspension guy right now.
Can you imagine? Right. Like,
no, it's, yeah, they're probably going through it.
And I kind of heard behind the scenes that they're wondering, like, hey, who gave you this KYB valving? Who did this for you? Who, you know, somebody did this, and some KYB people are asking those questions. So, cause they're competitive, right? So, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's, they're trying a lot of different stuff right now. Mm-hmm. And it's not bad to be searching. It definitely puts some pressure on Austria to do better. And that's, you know, a lot of good riders will do that too. Even if they have a good setting, they're going to tell you, hey, it's not there, you know? Mm-hmm. Like Millsaps was really good at that, and just to kind of keep you pushing. So at the end of the day, they're going to end up with a better WP product.
How much? Yeah. Yeah. How much, and we'll get in, I want to get into your career background and your sort of rise to the industry as well on this podcast, but from your time at the race team, like how big of a deal would this be? Is this just huge? Like, It, you know, from your time on the race team, just doing this, like, could you have ever imagined they would do this when you were there?
No. I mean, when Kenny was there, we definitely experimented with some different stuff. Mm-hmm. But it was all testing, you know, there's no way that it would ever make it to the track. Like the furthest we got was him finishing his career with us at on the 48s.
Yep.
But, I mean, we saw last year, everyone was bouncing around with that even. And, yeah, no, for them mm-hmm. to go race it, it's a pretty big statement.
How stiff is the new, KTM chassis? Like, from your experience, like, that's what I've been hearing is that, you know, they had a problem in the whoops, right? We saw that for years on the race team, and they went stiffer with the frame. They insisted on obviously the 52s for a long time. And this was a problem, huge front axle as well. And now they've sort of relaxed that statement a little bit, but is the issues that KTMs have, is it chassis or is it just suspension related?
It's chassis.
It is. Okay.
I mean, the suspension components really haven't changed that much. Mm-hmm. So the big underlying factor is the big changes they did in the frame.
Yep.
100%.
Yep. Okay. So is it more of a stiff frame?
Does it feel stiff? Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Am I going to say that it's stiffer? I'm not. I am going to say that it, go on record and say that it's a softer frame.
Oh, okay. But yep.
It feels stiffer because of the new load paths that they've created, basically.
Yeah, where the stiffness is, where they braced it and stuff. Okay, interesting. So, is this something that you hear, Mark, from? I mean, I'm sure you do some fast B motocross racers. You do some fast vet guys. Is this stuff you hear on the motocross side, or is this just a Aaron Plessinger, Chase Sexton issue?
So the comments of harshness, I think, come a little bit more when the rider is a slower caliber. The issue is when you're getting up to speed with the Sextons and things like this, they may have some comments of comfort issues, but primarily it's a handling issue, and you can see it in the apex of the corner. So it's from the same cause, but I would say it's a little bit different response or comments from the riders depending on their caliber.
Okay. Interesting too that because we all know when Coop was there, like, he fought the eternal battle. At one point I think he had FC doing his stuff and he went down to 48s, and then he leaves and they said, yeah, you can use 48s now. And Coop's like, oh, thanks, guys. It, like, basically got him fired, right? So
yep.
It's interesting. How much, when you were there, how much the politics did sort of frustrate you or open your eyes, let's say, as to what you can do and what you can't do? Like me, I'm a mechanic, guy, righty tighty, lefty loosey, and then I became a media guy. And like, even Roxon at RCH, like, they couldn't put the Showa stuff on, or the KYB stuff, I don't remember which one it was. Suzuki was losing their mind, and it's like, because the bike doesn't come with that. And KTM's like, no, we got to use 52s. We can't use 48s. And to me, it's just like ridiculous. Like, hey, let's try it. Like, it's not like you're, you know, when Suzuki was mad at Kenny, they're like, well, the bike comes with Showa, so we can't put KYBs on. But it's like, also the bike doesn't come with that exhaust and that bars and that graphic kit and everything else. So like, who cares? But man, the politics involved in this stuff, Mark, did it open your eyes to it, or did you understand it?
It can be tough to understand. Like you put it perfectly. You have other components on the bike that aren't OE. So it's a good argument. Luckily for me, when I was there, the politics honestly weren't so great.
Okay.
And we had a little bit more free reign, but just like any company, as it grows, it gets a little bit more corporate, and they have to tighten some things up and more people get involved. And there's this chain of command that you need yeses from these five guys before, you can do it. And that was ultimately the reason why I ended up starting REP.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, yeah. Talk about that a little bit. Let's go into the transition from WP, because I assumed you were just over the travel and the workload, but maybe not.
No, the workload now is definitely much more.
Okay.
Okay. Definitely not that. Basically it got to the point where you come up with an idea and, you know, you obviously want to try it that next day. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying any of this in a bad sense to them, but I'm just going to be truthful with what happened. But come up with an idea, you want to try it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't get approved for a little bit. So you miss a couple races. Rider finally tries it. They're stoked on it. And I basically was like, hey, we missed two rounds now. We need to find a way to get these changes to the rider quicker. And that's kind of what kickstarted it. So I was like, if that can't happen, then I'm going to do it on my own.
Yeah. Interesting, huh? Yeah. And so that's going back to Austria, and they're going to run a dyno, or they're going to look at it, or they're going to run that setting. Is that kind of what they were doing? Is that the delay, or who knows?
With at my time, it was all in the U.S. still. There didn't need any permissions from Austria unless it was something like a linkage or something like this. But now you kind of have to go through Austria as well. So that's where I'm saying it does stack up a little bit more to where you got to get a lot of yeses to get stuff happening.
Yeah, I've heard too from the rider side of things, if you don't like an answer, you can ask Ian, you can ask Roger, you can ask Robert Jonas, you can go to Pitt. You know, you can kind of, like, it's like the mom on the dad thing for a child,
100%.
Right? Like, you keep asking the people in charge and try to get your answer you want.
That's totally right. So, like, my go-to is always Raj. Like, he always had my back, and he was open-minded, just like we talked about earlier with the KYBs. He just wants to win. So, if I was kind of up against a wall, I would just go straight to him and it would happen, but it was, it just kind of tough to have to play that game.
Oh, okay. Interesting. So yeah, so it really wasn't the grind of racing that got you down. You were just like, hey, I think I can be successful. Think coming up with new ideas.
Yeah. 100%. I was just looking for lots of red tape and to try to find my full potential.
Yeah. Interesting. How is the suspension business like, financially for you? Like, how, I mean, obviously you can tell us what you need to, but like, has this been a really good thing, starting your business? And like you said, the workload is more, but like financially and everything else, like, how is it?
It's good, but for my stance, like, I'm not in this to make money. I'm really just truly passionate about it. Mm-hmm. So as long as my family's fed, I'm pumped.
Okay.
But no, business is great. Like, our biggest problem is that we blew up too quick, honestly. And I didn't know how to handle it. And I just didn't have the staff at that time to accommodate for everybody. So that was kind of like a big growing pain with it. But, it's awesome.
Listen, the first time I kind of, you were on my radar was, I'm like, oh, look at Chad. Chad picked REP. I didn't know much about REP, but Chad picked REP to do his stuff back a few years back. And I'm like, first of all, I wonder if Mark knows what he's in for. That's first of all.
That was my first experience working with Chad. Yeah. Obviously, you hear a lot of things from different suspension guys and mechanics and such. And I was like, oh boy, here we go. But it was awesome.
I was
very excited to work with him. We just sent him a set, like a moto set, actually recently. Don't know if he's ridden it yet, but he's full mini dad at the moment. But no, it was a great experience.
No, that's cool. Yeah, for sure. And at one point he had like the KYB stuff in the WP stuff. And then didn't he have some Showa lugs on or something? I don't know. We were making fun of him. I know that.
He messes around a lot.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, exactly.
But at the end of the day, he out of everyone I've worked with, he's probably one of my favorite guys to test with because he is so into it.
Okay.
And he has tried so many different things he can quickly pinpoint stuff that other guys haven't. And he was a big help with this new chassis for us, getting it set up for Supercross at least. So thanks for that, I guess, to him.
Yeah, that's interesting for sure. Mark Johnson here on the Fly Racing Racer X podcast. All right, let's go back a little bit, Mark. What's your path in the industry, like racing, riding, and then, you know, how do you transition into being interested in suspension and all of that?
Yeah, so I grew up racing. Was really slow. Wasn't going to make a career of it. And I really liked math. So I was like, you know, looking at my bike, working on my bike and then trying to find the limiting factor. And to me, it was suspension, that it could always be better. Right. So I was like, I'm going to make a career of this. Started doing some privateer stuff, my own stuff, playing around with it when I was younger.
Is this California? Grew up in California?
Yes, sir. Okay. Yep. Southern California. And, just playing around with it, going to Cal Poly Pomona for ME, and just handing out resumes at the races.
Mechanical engineering? Mechanical
correct.
Engineering.
Yeah. Correct.
Okay.
So, I didn't really have an in to the industry. So I literally was going to the races, handing out resumes. Like, I had to be on a team.
Really?
Like,
huh? Wow.
Whatever it took.
Yeah.
And one day I gave a resume to rookie Darren Sorensen. At the time he was at KTM. Sorry. And he ended up calling me 2 years later, and that's how I got the job.
Really?
Yep.
So you're younger than rookie?
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
Oh, that's interesting.
34.
That's crazy. Like, you're an engineer and you know, so you got a great schooling, you got a great background, and you're in Southern California and you didn't know any race team people? Like, you just cold resumed everybody? Yeah.
100%. Yeah. I did not have an in, but I wanted it. And, so believe it or not, I was just handing out resumes. So that's whenever someone asks me how to get in the industry, if they don't have an in, I tell them my story.
Oh, that's rare for sure. I've had a few engineers email me over the years from different parts of the country, and I've sent it on to a couple of people I know. And I'm like, look, man, I get that the old school suspension guy that, you know, never went to school and just has the trial and error of, you know, decades is also smart. But to me, I'm on the side of like, yeah, this guy's an actual engineer. He probably, you know, and he races and rides. So like, that seems to me to be a great combo if I was starting a suspension company, you know?
there's definitely a balance. Like if you're 100% one way or the other, you're, you're not going to succeed, you know?
Yeah.
You have to know the feel. You have to do trial and error. Just because you wrote some software and on paper, this is going to work, it doesn't mean it's going to work. Just because it looks good on the dyno doesn't mean it's going to work. So you really have to understand that it does come from both sides.
So when you're going to school, are you did you just buy like shims from Racetech and pistons and start doing your own and your buddy's stuff? Like how did you get that sort of, you know, practical knowledge?
So Dan Worley,
yeah,
SDI,
yeah, I know Dan.
He was my go-to. I would go there at night. He had just started SDI.
Okay.
And he was working at KYB during the day, and he would work all night at SDI getting that started, building just KYB stuff. And I would go there and pick his brain and buy shims and oil and that kind of thing. And yeah.
Okay. So that's how, yeah. So you were like at night, you were like getting the practical knowledge of it.
Yeah. And just like you said, a lot of trial and error. Like I ended up just buying suspension off eBay for myself, like multiple sets, and going out and trying it.
Oh,
and
wow.
Not knowing a clue what I was doing, you know?
No, but that's awesome. Yeah. I like Worley. He's a good dude. I've known him for a long time, fellow Canadian. Did you know Ross at all? Do you talk to Ross much?
So I've never got to meet Ross, but I'm a big fan of him. And, what's cool about him is like, you were saying earlier, everyone's super competitive. Well, when I started REP, as soon as the word got out, he actually sent me some tools for free.
Yeah.
He was like, hey, dude, like get started. Like, I was like, dude, that's
awesome.
So rad.
Yeah. I love to hear that. He is one of my favorite people in the industry, and he's awesome because he's like literally seen and done it all. And sometimes we would test with him like Yamaha days or Nick Way or something. I don't remember and he would just go like, I don't know. I don't know if this is going to work. Let's try it. Like there was no ego there of like, I know everything. He was like, I don't know. Just throw it in. Let's try it. You know?
Absolutely. No, that's the right mindset.
He is. He's a gem, man. And I'm glad he did that. That's super cool. More people need to know just how cool Ross Maeda is, you know?
100%. So yep.
He just sent you free tools. That's funny.
Yeah. No, like, you know, so many people would want to kind of put their guard up against you, and he did the opposite. So hats off to him.
Yeah, absolutely. So how do you get the WP gig from Rookie? Rookie sends it to somebody?
Yeah. So Rookie was looking for a guy to help with the off-road team, and he was doing the Supercross motocross, and he called me. I was working at Langston's at the time.
Okay.
And they called the shop. Gerald's like, hey, KTM's on the phone for you. And I was like, that's weird, because I forgot. It's been 2 years since I gave him the resume, you know? And they're like, hey, you want a job doing off-road suspension? I'm like, sign me up, pack my stuff, I'm out, you know? So that's how it started. And did off-road for a year, which
is that like, Caselli or Caleb Russell and these dudes?
Exactly. Yep. Yeah, we did Heron Hounds, Works, GNCC, Enduros, that kind of stuff. Yeah, those are the riders I was at the time where I was with.
Okay. So I heard like the Showa's guys over the years, they've come and gone, and someone told me, they love to take people who don't know that much and teach them the Showa way. They don't really want you to have a lot of experience because they want to teach you the Showa way, whatever that is. You would know more than I would. Is WP like that? Were they like, hey, forget what you know, engineer guy, and here's what we do? How was that?
I feel like every suspension company is that way, whether it's a team or not.
All right. Okay.
They don't want someone to come in that's stubborn and argumentative on how to do things. I think 99% of people prefer to train somebody up.
Okay. All right. So was WP like that for you then? Yeah.
Yeah. Because at the time I had no real experience other than, you know, like I said, doing some privateers and some buddies and me. And, so Rookie's really the one who got me on my way.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. And then from there you go to the Supercross team. What year is that?
Yep. So that was the following year.
Okay.
So Rookie had moved out of that position, and Roger was coming up. That was when Roger was coming on board.
Yep.
And, that's when I stepped in. And then I think it was a year later, Dunge came, and it kind of solidified the whole program.
Yeah, we did a podcast with Dunge about the re-raceables, about him switching to KTM and winning that first race in Phoenix. I think it was Phoenix, the first one. And he was telling us that bike, I mean, look, it was an off-road kind of motor. They retrofitted to, you know, Supercross, and then the chassis was a little outdated. And Dungeon's like, they changed something every single week on it. Every time I went out, it was a different bike. We were learning. And Dungeon was like, it was kind of amazing we even won that early. Do you remember that part of it?
Dude, every time he swung his leg over the bike, it was a new shock or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Raj had a lot of catching up to do. Mm-hmm. For KTM, and we tried a lot of stuff. I don't know how he was capable of going that fast on completely different setup all the time. Like, he never got a chance to get used to the bike.
Yeah, kind of what he told us too, right? It was just so different. Working with Raj, obviously, look, he's a very skilled machinist on the lathe and mills and things like that. How is he for suspension and all of that? Like, how often did you pick his brain, or he would say something to you where you're like, holy shit, like, Raj knows.
His memory is really good. So he's tried so much different stuff. He's ridden so many different things. But he remembers this stuff. He retains this stuff. So he'd be like, hey, you know, and on the Honda this year at this track, we tried this in the Ford and it worked, you know, for kind of what we're looking for right now.
Yeah.
It's like, fuck, all right, let's try it, you know? And so he was a great resource for that kind of stuff.
And would he be able to machine stuff for you, or like callers?
All the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If he was doing something important on the computer, if he said, hey, I need this machine, he would just turn his computer off. He would,
really? Yeah,
he would run straight to the machine shop, yeah.
That's funny. Yeah, it's odd to see that from a guy who was a world champion, right? Like, you know, racers, like, you know, no offense to the racers, but they're not doing what Raj did. He just came from a different era. You know,
so. Yeah, totally different program.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So pretty much immediate success for you as a suspension guy with Dunge over the years. I guess you want to forget about the Lomol MXDN. We could probably forget about that one. Right?
I learned a lot there, though.
Did you?
I learned a lot.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll never forget that race.
I heard from somebody from Team USA that you were absolutely pulling your hair out. Is that a true story? Is that a true statement?
So, I like, my first memory of that race is I go in, we're super excited, we're confident in the bike and just the team. And I see him come around like opening practice lap that morning, and I've never seen sand like that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh man, Dunge looks good. You know, I'm like looking around like, all right, we're looking good. Mm-hmm. And then Hurlings comes around and I was like, oh shit. Like, we have some work to do.
Yeah.
And all the Dutch WP guys were just laughing at me. They're like, oh man, like you aren't ready.
Now, I kind of heard that they turned your back on you guys a little bit. True?
I wouldn't say that. Like,
okay.
What probably was kind of tough during that era is, like, WP was in the Netherlands. I was going to the Netherlands.
Yeah.
And Austria hasn't really taken over the WP side of things. So at that time, there was kind of three. You have US, you have Austria, and you have the Netherlands all kind of butting heads a little bit.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah. Right.
And both Austria and the Netherlands, I mean, look at their success rate at that time in the GPs.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
they basically could tell you, like, you guys are the issue, you know? So I wouldn't ever say that they turned their back to us, but they couldn't understand why we were struggling in Supercross.
Okay. Yeah. It's interesting. Cause, yeah. Well, I was more talking about, like, that race itself. I kind of heard that. Either way, I heard that the race, you guys are like, at the Lomo, you're like, hey, you know, can you help us? And they're like, yeah, no, not really.
That was one thing that I remembered is the guys from Wilfred, actually, he was in charge at the time of the Netherlands, and he actually came over and pointed me in the right direction.
So okay.
If it wasn't for him, we honestly probably would have had some, had a really long trip there. So,
dude, look at your first job, obviously the off-road team. I'm sure you won there, and then you move over to the Supercross motocross team. Dunge comes on board, and like, yeah, you must have been like, this is awesome, this is a great industry.
Yeah.
Right.
No, like, there's a lot of ups and downs with it, even with my career, but I definitely looking back was on the higher end of it. Like, I didn't have that many downs, and I got to be a part of a lot of championships, and no regrets at all. I learned a lot, and we definitely were doing good stuff at that point.
I heard at some point Dunge, like as good as fast as he was, not a great tester, and also if the lap times didn't reflect where he wanted to be, he kind of panicked a little bit at times. Would that be accurate?
That is.
Yeah.
He's a great motor guy. He was quite easy to point them in the right direction with that. But with suspension, he got a little bit too in his head at times.
Yeah.
So he was definitely tough to figure out. But when it comes down to lap times, like at the end of the day, that is what matters. Mm-hmm. So if he's feeling good, but the lap times are down, I'm going to kind of agree maybe we shouldn't be on that setting.
Really? Okay. Yeah. See, for me, and again, you're way smarter than I am as a mechanic. I'd be like, you know, if Red Dog was off, I'd be like, look, you got a podium with this stuff on this track last year or on a similar track. You got a podium with this stuff. We know this works. We know you like it. You're just, you know, you woke up on the wrong side of the bed today. You know, let's just trust the process here to use a term. And not change something. That's sort of my thinking, but you're going the other way.
On race situations, I agree with you.
Okay.
Like you know what's working. You know what you've done in the past.
Yeah,
it's not a time to really mess about. Like I'm more referring to test days. Like if you're just trying 30 different shock settings.
Yep.
Like if one's faster than the rest, and you're maybe just not quite as comfortable.
Yep.
I'm going to keep you on that until maybe it does get a little bit more comfortable. Maybe you're just not used to it.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was talking more like race day. Like I kind of heard Dunge was like, hey, I'm third in practice. Change the clamps, change the forks, change the shock. You know, that's kind of what I heard.
That is how we were.
Okay.
But it's taught me to be proactive, and I mm-hmm. try to do all my work prior. And now I try not to do that kind of stuff on race day, where back at that point in time with him, it was test a little bit during the week, couple days a week. And then like the majority of your testing could potentially be on Saturday.
Sure. Okay. All right. Yeah. And you're ready for it though. You're ready for it.
But yeah. It's like you said, it's got to be a little bit of a mind fuck for the rider. And maybe put him into an uncomfortable situation where he may have won there last year, and now you're completely changing the setup for that day.
Interesting. How much, like, obviously you're a racer, you admitted you're a slow racer, but you were a racer. Dealing with some of these riders and talking them off the ledge, or you know, changing something really small and them saying it's the best thing ever, and you kind of roll your eyes because you're like, well, that's not, you know, it's a couple shims on the high speed, calm down. What's your and I don't even mean like settings wise, but just mentally dealing with guys like that. Are you a guy that's okay, or have you had to put your foot down over the years and be like, no, man, I believe in this, or whatever. Like, what's your attitude like with racers?
You 100% have to be a bit of a psychologist.
Yes.
You have to get in their head a little bit. You have to learn their verbiage. You do kind of have to, in my opinion, kind of be soft at times with them. I was never the type of person to put my foot down. I kind of always gave some value to what the rider's feeling, even if they're woke up on the wrong side of the bed and they're just not feeling it that day. If they're feeling something, in my experience, it may be 6 months or a year later, but you'll kind of come back to that and be like, hey, maybe he was actually on to something that day.
Okay.
So one of the biggest mistakes I've ever made was disregarding some of those comments from them when they're just losing it, you know?
Interesting. Have you ever taken a shock off, cleaned it with contact cleaner, then put it back on, and the rider told you it was way better?
I've never done it.
Okay. I do know one suspension guy who did that.
With Dunge, though, there was one time we were sitting on top of a triple, and we're talking about doing a couple clicks on low speed, and we were just testing that day. We're talking about it. We decided not to. He thought we did it. He went out, did a couple laps, came in, and it's like way better. And I'm like, what was way better, you know?
You were confused. You're like, wait.
Yeah, like, no, we discussed it. We didn't actually do it. So I've never intentionally done it, but that's the closest I've gotten to that.
Yeah, I heard Bones with a pretty high-profile rider. Took the shock, took it in the truck, cleaned it up, put it back on. The rider was like, oh, so much better. So then Bones was like, okay, cool. Now I know where I'm at with you, you know?
No, and that there is value to that test to see if the rider, you know, especially if you don't know the rider,
mm-hmm.
like they could have no idea what they're talking about. And that will kind of give you an understanding of what you're working with that day.
Who's a couple of great riders you've worked with testing wise? I could really tell you.
Andrew Short's awesome. He's always really calm. Mm-hmm. He doesn't spin out.
Yep.
He takes a lot of notes. He has notes kind of like Raj does, like from everything he's ever ridden. So he's the first one that comes to mind. Chad would be another one, just because he isn't scared to tell you when something's not working or mm-hmm. not feeling the way it should for him. Would be another one. Those are the first two that definitely come to mind.
And then give me a couple guys that you just couldn't make happy, couldn't gel with.
I mean, I guess Dunge was never really satisfied with the bike.
Okay.
The amount of settings that went into his shocks, it was pretty wild.
Right.
So he was a tough one.
And then I heard when he came back, he was super easy to deal with when he came back a couple years ago.
Yeah, but that's how Chad was too.
Okay.
Like when he came to me, like the pressure's off.
Yep.
And they're in a different mindset. They've matured. You know, they're not at 100, just full throttle in their mind race mode for years. Like they get that little bit of break and they come back mm-hmm. a little, you know, a lot more relaxed.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. It's funny how that works, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
How much, when you're working with a guy, obviously, look, you can change the trail, you can change the rake, you can change the links. There's so much motor mounts, even frame bracing. You know, we know you guys ran that brace across the front for a little while, especially on 250s. I don't know if 450s or not, but like, how much do you look at that kind of stuff as a chassis guy and be like, let's do this instead? Or do you find a comfort setting, motor mounts, clamps, rake, and then, okay, we know we're going indoors. We know we got to bring it in, you know, that kind of stuff. And then now we're going to work on fork and shock. Or do you, because I always found like it was a radical change to do that stuff with riders outside of suspension stuff. Do you go back to that a lot or do you leave it?
So I'm to kind of divide or give you a ratio of like suspension to chassis. For me, I'm about 50-50.
Oh, okay. So
I focus just as much on the chassis as I do the suspension. Because at the end of the day, you know, you can do big swings on suspension and get a 20% change gain or loss.
Yep.
But with chassis, you can do smaller changes to make a bigger effect. So if your chassis isn't set up right, I don't care what suspension you're going to put on it, you're going to struggle.
Okay. All right.
And that's something that is like the foundation, the core of, you know, my belief with bike setup.
I feel it's interesting that, and I think we've learned this, like at one point, well, my days as a mechanic, we had 18 mil shock shafts. We had really sturdy triple clamps. We had those KYB bell bottom things that came out. KTM had 52s with that big front axle, although there's a steel frame versus aluminum. But I think in the last, say, 6-7 years, Mark, and you can correct me, I think we've learned that we all went way too stiff and way too far with materials, and now we're backing it down.
Yeah. Yeah. I know you definitely see the manufacturers doing this. They kind of found the limit with some of the bikes. Cause at the end of the day, they're trying to win championships, but they're also trying to sell bikes.
Mm-hmm.
If you're making this bike for a championship level guy, it's going to be hard for that guy at REM to like it as much. So mm-hmm. They're going to try to pick and choose. And I think they're always going to continue to kind of waver and go back and forth between those two directions.
It seemed like we would, at Yamaha when I was there, we would start with just everything we put on the bike was stiffer. Mag, clamps, forks, bars. We would start with a way stiffer bike than production. And that would be our base. And it's always like, you know, we saw GL, right, in his championship year go back to stock clamps. Kenny did it. You know, we saw Yamaha taking a lot of aluminum out of the frame around the GL days. And it always seemed like we would automatically just put everything on that was stiffer. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, how many times have you seen, you know, mechanics and riders kind of shady on a day off go ride a stock bike?
Yeah.
They start putting stock parts on their factory bike
and
they're like coming back like, hey, like, I think we're going the wrong direction here.
Yeah. I think that's why, like, we've kind of seen those split triple clamps become more popular. I mean, they're even stock on the Triumph, right? I think those things are working. That kind of material, that kind of design, let's say.
The idea behind it, yes. Does the actual split, in my opinion, make that big of a difference? Maybe not so much.
Okay. All right. Yep.
Like we've actually been working a lot on clamps for the past 6 months, mm-hmm. and we're kind of finding some interesting things. And that's definitely one that came up, and we were surprised with the result of the split clamp. Actually,
are these the special parts you were talking about earlier that you can't talk about?
Part of it. Yeah.
Are we ever going to get to a point where we're doing races, we're doing offset races and things for customers?
So I actually had, when this new KTM came out, and just even before we got it, I'm looking at the points and I sit down, I'm just looking at the chassis and the software, you know, and I already started coming up with stuff that I wanted to try, and races was one of them. So I had quarter and half degree races made, and that was something that was going to end up going into production. But dude, making races is, it's either really expensive or it's really tough.
Yeah, and I was told it was expensive. Yeah.
Yes. So I was trying for a long time to find a way to make it consumer friendly price wise. Mm-hmm. I was never able to do it. So I know FCP now, they have some stuff, I guess, coming out. Mm-hmm. So, which is awesome. I think it's something that should be more readily available.
Yeah. I was asking them about it, and it should be good. It should be interesting. They're a sponsor of my pulp show, so I think we can give customers a bit of a deal. But that's a huge thing, right, to do? To
make. Absolutely.
Yeah, like, yeah. I feel like the average guy, if you change his offset, would be, oh, my God, like instantly tell a difference.
Yeah, no, yeah. And that's also the races is something that a lot of people haven't experienced, like the general consumer at least. So mm-hmm. it could be a feel, you know, something that they've never experienced before, to where they're like, hey, this is what I've been wanting for a long time.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's definitely some benefit there.
Have you ever got a chance, did you ever get a chance at WP or to see on a computer or to see a simulation of a chassis flex, of a frame flex and doing things, and look at that?
So at KTM, not simulations, but they did have chassis dynos, where they would have the bikes just hammering bumps. Yeah. And, it was more of a longevity kind of thing, more than like a stiffness thing.
Yeah.
But when the new KTM came out, we actually bought a 3D scanner and we scanned a frame in. And then we just started loading this thing and just simulating it. So we got a lot of information really quick from that. So that was honestly our first go at trying to simulate bikes as a whole.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. Did you ever do any things at KTM with like putty and stuff like that? Like on the frame chassis and things?
No. Yeah. Putty not. Like Rod definitely had some ideas. And he had some stories definitely from the aluminum frames that they'd worked with. Like it seemed like people did a lot more fucking around with those things than the steel frames. It was more of like with the steel frames, everyone's trying to gusset stuff. And like, I think the new frame actually needs it, in my opinion, in the shock tower especially. And no one's really done it yet.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to figure out a way to actually have like a bolt-on system for this.
But
we're just not quite there yet.
Yeah, interesting. If you could... In your eyes, as a chassis suspension guy, do you like steel frames or aluminum frames? Like, what I can see pluses and minuses to both.
I like steel.
Yeah.
I like steel. Yeah.
Okay. I know I just got back from the Triumph thing, and, you know, that's a single backbone aluminum frame.
Yep.
And of course, it's Triumph. It's their new bike, but they were saying this is perfect. This is the design of a steel frame, but made in aluminum. And we love this. This is the best way to do it. And I'm like, okay, cool. They're just trying to sell a bike, you know, but yeah.
I mean, like the first comments you hear when they release that bike, is everyone's like, oh man, that's the 06 YZ. Like, that's my favorite bike. They picked and chose like all the best things that they've ever come across, you know, because they have a lot of bright guys there that have been around racing. So they're like, let's get this kind of motor package. Let's get this kind of chassis. And for a start, like you have to start somewhere. So why not just pick all your favorite things that you've ever had and just mesh it together and start, you know.
That's a good fork too, right? That KYB SSS thing, right?
So I haven't seen inside this yet, but I've heard it's a little bit different. Like have something new.
Yep.
And I've asked quite a few guys and I don't know exactly what it is, but I'm hoping to get my hands on a set in the next couple weeks.
Okay. Yeah, I think they should be out soon, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Mark Johnson on REP Suspension. Please check it out. It's what's the website for you? Sorry.
REPsuspension.com.
Okay. All right. I just had the AEO one open. REPsuspension.com. So working with Jeremy and the team, do you get, because of your background and your experience, can you get some special stuff? Can you get some parts, and can you call some people and get things?
I mean, we haven't had really the need to yet.
Okay.
I feel like we have enough resources to where we honestly can kind of make anything we want happen. But yeah, I'm sure if we ever needed to, that we probably could lean on some guys there, and they would likely help us out.
How's the pride of Manitoba, Ryder McNabb? I know he got hurt, but how was he looking before then?
He was looking good. He has no supercross experience prior, so mm-hmm. it was definitely a learning curve for him. But that's kind of thing. It's like, well, we want to get him some experience under his belt because he's going to be going full time in supercross next year.
Mm-hmm.
But we also don't want to make any mistakes or anything for outdoors. So
yep.
It's one of those, you know, cost reward situations. And, but I mean, the kid's super easy to work with.
Yep.
He's decent to test with, and, he's always calm and he goes fast. So.
Oh, good. Yeah. Well, I'm from Manitoba. We've never really had great riders before. So my hope is on him. So that's what we're
yeah,
at.
Too.
Also, I have to ask you the eternal question. Is Kiefer just full of shit? Like, just, he's just terrible test rider. Just, I mean, can we just put it on the record now so he can listen to this? Because, like, I got to hear about this, and he sends me texts, and, like, even, like, he had a factory rider a little while ago write him and say, you're exactly right, and then he just loved to mock it and rub it in my face, you know? So.
Well, I think, just, like, generally speaking, anyone that rides as many bikes as he does,
mm-hmm.
you got to give him credit for some feedback. It's the guys that are – stuck, like if he's only riding
a Yamaha,
Yamaha
or whatever, yeah,
or whatever, yeah, yeah, like yeah, then it is hard to take him out testing on the KTM, you know, and or the Yamaha, like it, you yeah. want someone that is a bit versatile. But no, I rely on his comments, especially for our KTM production stuff. He's helped us quite a bit there.
Oh boy, here we go. Now I got to hear about it again. No, I'm kidding. He's great. He's fantastic. Like the Triumph guys are really stoked, you know, and I'm trying to go around and find people to talk shit on his testing skills. I really can't, Mark. I really can't. So, it's unfortunate. Does what you do, this could be a dumb question, but if someone brings you a Gas 450 and a Husqvarna 450, and there are some differences in subframes and airbox and links and stuff, I mean, does the same thing work?
It's a different setup for the KTM, for the Gas, for the Husky.
It is. Okay.
And
okay.
The fact that they're making changes every 6 months to these bikes, dude, I've being the WP guy.
Yeah. Quote unquote, the WP guy.
Yeah. It is crazy, dude. I feel like I have 12 different bikes that we're operating on at a single time, just with Austrians. It's okay. Absolutely nuts.
Interesting. So yeah. So you do change things up a little bit. It doesn't necessarily work for everything.
Yeah. And, for an example of this, we have a guy hopping on a KTM and he says, hey, I'm going to get a fresh gas. And I'm like, hey, just throw it on. Maybe it'll work for you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to try to spend your money, but a lot of times they'll come back and they're like, yeah, we need to make changes.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. I didn't know. Like I there's small differences, but they add up is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so going back to the KYB kit, again, I'm buddies with guys at Race Tech, and this seems to be, I mean, it's expensive, but it seems to be the thing that these guys love. But you're saying, Mark, that you can get the air to work for these guys.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, it's all on setup. Like, you can have complete A-kit stuff, or you could have production stuff. It's all, at the end of the day, dependent on the setting. But their fork for us has been really successful. Like, we do a lot of parallel testing between the two, and, like, hey, Jacob Hayes was a good example of this. We're trying to just better our production and our cone stuff. Mm-hmm. And we'd always let him choose at the end of the week, like, hey, you can race whatever you want to race. And he would always pick the air stuff.
Okay.
And that's kind of what kicked off the eye opening a little bit to the air. But we get way more positive feedback on their setup for sure.
And I mean, it's cheaper for an average consumer, right? I don't know what those KYB stuff. I think a couple grand.
Right.
Yeah.
No, and that's like I'll tell the customer like, hey, put your faith in me, stick with Air. I'm going to talk you out of the KYB kit or the car kit or whatever. And like, you're going to call me back, not only happy, but your wallet's going to be stoked too.
Yeah.
And sure enough, they'll call a couple weeks later and they're like, dude, thank you. That was the right choice.
Okay.
But
interesting.
The KYB kit is good. A lot of people do gravitate that way.
Yeah. From what I understand, again, you know way more than I do, but from what I understand, it was the must have, you know, mod for KTM WPs, but you're saying no. How much, though, do you worry? Like, I got buddies that don't check the goddamn sag, Mark, on their bike. And how much do you worry about these guys? Hey, you got to check the air pressure. Like, you got to do this. It's like, check your chain, check your air pressure. Like, right? For the average guy. Yeah.
It's definitely one more step that you need to be aware of. Like, even if they have the KYB conversion, are they setting their sag?
Yeah, yeah.
What are they torquing their bike to? What is their chain slack at? Where is their fork bike height? It's there's so much stuff. So at the end of the day, it's just one more thing that they could be messing up, which not ideal. But how, like you said, how many guys are not setting their sag right?
So, yeah. Oh, or like, remember the Suzuki Showa stuff, 3 air chambers. Like, good God. Right?
Like, no, and that's where WP killed it. They had a bunch of different designs for the air fork, they ended up choosing this one because it's like, hey, it's one valve.
Yep.
It's one valve. Like, let's not spin these guys out.
Have you seen, heard, well, you've talked to people, I'm sure, about this hybrid KYB fork that the factory Tomac's running, like the light spring rate with the air?
That is my personal go-to, is to do a hybrid, something like this, which we do in the air fork. We're playing around with it in the cone fork, and you kind of get the best of both worlds. Mm-hmm. You get a progression of the air, and there is something to be said about having spring in the front just to have a more weighted feel. You get more stability coming in the corner with that weight. Like, if you do have an air fork, I would highly suggest maybe running some tungsten in your axle, like that kind of thing.
Oh,
so,
okay. Yeah.
The hybrid setup for me is all time best. But I don't ever really bring it up just because it's not like a production release, something that you could buy off the floor. It's something that has to be built.
I may or may not have had a set on my bike for a while, and it was great. It was amazing. Can you explain for the listeners, and maybe me too, the and there's a lot of like the difference between factory forks, and you can go either one, A kit stuff, and then production stuff. Just give our listeners a little bit of the differences, and you know what we're talking about when we say I got A kit stuff, and you know, and all this.
Yeah. So factory stuff, I mean, even when you get to the factory level, I would almost kind of break that into two categories, because you have a team, you're going to have, you know, your top one or two guys that are maybe on Showa or WP. Those guys might be on like complete prototype stuff, and you're talking different piston sizes, different cart sizes, different rod sizes, maybe different tube thicknesses, like small run material that they don't have much of. And underneath that, you're going to have your traditional factory material. That's going to be stuff that isn't available to the public. It, you know, it is going to have different pistons and components that you're not going to see, at least for many years in something consumer released. But then you have A-kit stuff. Like, Cho has done a really great job with this.
Yeah, they have.
the amount of tunability that their A-kit stuff has, like, blows me away compared to KYB and WP. So, I don't know. They're on like a whole nother level in the A-kit category, but the, just for tunability at least. But this stuff is normally held under tighter tolerances. Maybe if you don't have all the tuning options, at least everything's bore sizes and things like that are normally held a bit tighter. And then you have the production material that they make for, you know, dollars for a set, and it goes on every bike, and it's doesn't change that much as far as like year to year goes. It's, they kind of set it and forget it for a little while, but other than settings, but the actual like hardware isn't changing that much.
And basically the A-kit stuff for the WP is the track stuff.
Correct. Yeah, that'd be their Conan tracks.
Okay. And is that worth the money in your eyes for an average guy?
Tough to say. Like,
okay.
I always tell a customer, if you're really stuck in your head against the air, like, yeah, we'll build you Conan tracks. But
okay.
Again, I always try to go the air route, to go the production route.
Yep.
And our success rate is really good with it, and it'll save them a lot of money. So mm-hmm. unless you're going to get a gain mentally from doing it, I honestly don't know if it's worth it.
Right. Right. And I would say the same for the A-Kit Showa stuff too, in my eyes. Right.
Man, that stuff is expensive.
Yes, I know. And you get coatings and it looks bitchin'. And like you said, the adjustability is a little better, but I mean, for the elite of the elite, it's better.
Big price tag.
Right.
Yeah. And that's there's some guys that, you know, if they're fast enough, then that's about the only time that I'll start pushing towards that, just mm-hmm. because it is a more rigid structure. So they're not going to be as concerned with comfort as they are precision. And that's when I'll start to go the other route.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Interesting. Right. You just see all these amateurs. I got a kit. What's like, do you really know what you're doing? With the AK stuff, you know, right? So,
yeah, no, and then you have to find someone that knows how to work on it too, which is a little bit different.
And I mean, the fork that's on the new Hondas, I mean, from what I was told, that was basically factory stuff from back in the day that turned into AK, that turned into production.
Right.
You know,
exactly. Like
from however many years ago, right? So that's pretty impressive that we're now selling that in production stuff.
Yeah, so. I mean, if it's good enough on race level for long enough, it's going to trickle down and make its way to the consumer eventually.
Right. How backed up are you with suspension right now? Like for people who are listening that may want to call you and try it out, how what's the turnaround time?
We're not bad right now. Yep. We're about a week out, but we also do bookings too, because we are a bit more race oriented, to where we know you have a training schedule, races and all that. So mm-hmm. you can always book an appointment, and then it's 72 hours from your appointment date. So that way you can keep training.
Oh,
and
cool.
Then you have okay, I'm going to take a break.
Yep.
I'm going to send it in, and then you're not without your stuff.
Oh, cool. And then how much of your job is sort of, you do a set of suspension for a guy in Missouri, and he calls you and says, I don't like it, or what about this? And how much follow-up do you have to do with people, generally speaking?
It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot more than I anticipated, to be honest. Like, you know, sometimes they want to call and just let you know how good it is, or maybe they just need a little bit of click advice, or maybe it's not for them. And that's the tricky thing about suspension is mm-hmm. there's no perfect setting that's going to work for everybody. And you know, you have to be understanding of that to be like, hey, you're probably riding this thing a lot different. So let's figure you out. You know, it's to be able to hit it out, you know, a home run straight away.
Yeah.
It's not an easy thing to do.
No, absolutely not. You've had a nice career in the sport. Was there a moment, I want to say probably when you're on the race team, was there a moment where you were just like, this is awesome, this is amazing, like either a race or a championship, or, you know, behind the scenes, something that you guys really, you know, as a team came together and, you know, changed a championship trajectory or something like that, like that you can think of? Like one that stands out among all the ones you did win?
The first one that comes to mind, it was Kenny in Vegas, and I want to say it was just a third dude. And, mm-hmm. but for whatever reason, like we were just battling for so long, and to get that, I just remember like all of us just being so pumped. Like me and Layton were running down to the podium, you know, and, that one for whatever reason stands out to me.
Interesting. It's funny when Kenny, I've told the story on the show a few times, but when Kenny was leaving for Suzuki RCH, I still stand by, I think there was an Astafin driven move for Hart and, you know, all of that, but he dominated outdoors. And then I'm like, why are you leaving? He's like, my bike sucks. And I'm like, your bike sucks. You just beat Dunge like badly, you know, like, what are you talking about? Like, I never understood that, you know? Okay, so no, you're gonna go to the RMZ. Cool, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that guy's a bit of a special case. He's just so talented. Like I always tell guys, you can put him on anything.
Yeah.
And he might be completely hating the bike, but the dude can go. Like when it's time to do it, and he's more than capable.
Yeah, he's got that gene in him, and Chad had it too. I saw it at Yamaha where track sucks. He's off in practice. He's not happy. He's bitching. Things aren't good. The lights go on, or, you know, the motos start, and he makes it work, you know? Like, that's what the elite guys do.
Yeah, there's a big key part of a racer to be able to switch from test mode or bitching mode to I gotta fucking go mode.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of guys that are able to do that. Like, yeah. It's a hard thing to learn.
You know what's crazy about Kenny, and again, you have experience with him, is, you know, I kind of know the Honda guys well, and he was never that happy, and he wanted to try that BFRC shock, and they wouldn't let him because they didn't have any enough for him, and he, you know, they just threw the kitchen sink at the bike. And I'm just like, how can factory Honda not make him happy? How can Showa and factory Honda not make him happy? I mean, I have a lot of respect for the Honda guys and all the things they could do. So smash cut to HEP, and, like, you know, Matt from Active Ride, he's just a race tech dealer, good guy, super smart. They've changed the oil height, and that's all they've touched. Just where Kenny is, he's happy in his life. He's back on a yellow fender. Maybe that's it. But he's the happiest dude in the world now. And I'm like, wait, factory Honda, and no offense to the Pipes team and RMZ, but, you know, not happy factory Honda Showa, very happy HEP. I don't get it, Mark. I just don't get it. But more power to him.
A couple of things with that. Like, one, when you're at the factory level, you have so much at your disposal, so many options. It's really easy to get lost.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you need to go to a little bit less of a program where you're like, hey, this is what we got.
Yeah.
There's no choices. Yeah. You just got to go. But he also, I think, has, you know, with his family and everything now, he also has got to be a little bit more relaxed and probably a little bit different mindset than how he used to be.
Yeah. Yeah, probably, right? Like, it's just, it's phenomenal. Like, I'm just like, when he went to HEP, I'm like, how are they going to keep this dude happy? You know? And they did. They have. So,
no, that's awesome.
That brings me to another question. I didn't have this written down, but what about that BFRC and everything involved in that? Obviously, the production one on the RMZ, sort of hit and miss. Some guys like it, some guys don't. We saw Chase on it. Geyser's been on it for a few years. It's a really different system for a rear shock. What's your thoughts on it?
I don't have a ton of experience with that shock. I've never talked to someone that was really for it.
Okay.
And that's rider or suspension guy. It's different. And
yeah.
To make something like that work, especially in supercross applications, it's a completely different animal for sure.
It did feel like Showa was trying to force it on guys, whether it's JGR or Cowie, you know, like, this is it.
Yeah. I would agree.
And it's interesting because I heard, and maybe you can back this up, from an engineering point of view, from a design point of view, and that's certainly, you know, something you went to school for, it should work awesome and it should be perfect. Did you?
Yeah.
You know,
and
theoretically? Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree that, you know, that shock and even Olin's, they do things that on paper, this should be a better performing shock.
Mm-hmm.
You should not have the cavitation risk that you would with, you know, a traditional shock. But at the end of the day, if you can't get it working on the track,
yeah,
well, you know, what good is it?
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. Right. Hey, when you were at KTM, did they ever tell you that they want to take the link off again? Did they ever tell you about
no.
that? No. Okay.
I never heard that one.
What are your thoughts on that PDS system from an engineering point of view or working on it? Because I was at KTM when we raced Supercross and Motocross with it, and they actually sent a really nice British guy, I think his name was Kevin, from Holland to work with us, and he was telling us, he was showing us the dyno of the PDS and then the dyno of a regular shock, and he's like, look, they're the same. Through Supercross, they're exactly the same. This is Supercross setting. And I remember, like, GL was like, yeah, they're not the same. I don't care what that dyno says. But what are your thoughts on that?
No, it kind of goes back to how we started the conversation. Uh-huh. With why the leverage ratio is so different with the KTM. And you have to go to a roll light spring. Well, a PDS, you know, you're going way up on damping. You're going way up on spring.
Mm-hmm.
Due to the leverage. So on paper, you can make them the same.
Yeah.
But obviously the feel is a lot different. Like, anyone who's ever ridden one can still attest for those things in the sand.
Yeah.
And there's just something there that works. And what that is exactly, I'm not sure, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. It was interesting to see that the the dino, the guy yelling at us, telling us the dino shows us the same curve.
It's the same.
It's same but different, right? Same but different.
That's same but different.
That's what the Japanese say all the time.
Yeah, same, same, same but different.
Awesome, Mark. Did we cover everything? Did anything else you wanted to talk about, or did we get it all?
No, no, I feel pretty comfortable about it.
Okay, awesome. Well, thanks for the time, man. I really appreciate it. REP Suspension, please check them out on the website if you want to get anything done. WPKYB, Showa, anything, right? Not the WP guy. Let's get that straight.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks for your time. A really cool path in the industry. Congrats on all the success. I know, you know, I see your sticker on so much suspension in the pro pits. It's not even funny. I don't know how you keep up with all of it. You know,
thank you.
And then you got the magazine guys like Kiefer complaining and Michael Lindsay and these whiners. So, thanks for the time. I really appreciate it. Hope we educated some people, and we'll see you at the races, man. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you.
This has been the Fly Racing Steve Mathis Show, presented by Maxxis Tires, Renthal, Motorsport.com, and Kuba Links on RacerXOnline.com. Thanks for listening and supporting our partners. Don't change the air. Don't change a thing.